last time as just kind of the underpinning. I just wanted to remind everybody as we're looking at this, because this is an important underpinning for the covenants. Actually, before I do that, I just want to remind you guys, if you have questions or have thoughts, we do have a roving mic option. Mr. Radoval, just raise your hand if you had a comment or a question about anything that's getting covered, and I'm happy to go ahead and take various rabbit trails and answer questions, because really the purpose of this is not just to cover material, but it's to, we're opening God's Word to talk about it and to be able to have a conversation around what it means for us as His children and how that should affect our lives. So please, if you have anything, raise your hand. If I seem to be blind to it because I'm looking down, wave it frantically. And if you can't get my attention, you can always ask for that really glittery beady tie to wave in the air. So, all right, I put him up to it, I have to say. No, actually, a number of us in the house put him up to wear the tie. So, all right. So we're picking up where the Abrahamic covenant. And the underpinning, again, of the covenants, I think is very important for us to always have the delineation between the covenant and the law. I'm going to keep hammering this as we go through because it's so important. The law is a law is a law. It's God's way. It does not change. It will never change. And it is always in place. Always has been in place. And we're going to go over things where we'll see instances of God's way and His law already being in place outside of these covenants. Any covenant that is made, whether it's with Adam and Eve, or whether it's Noah, or whether it's with Abraham, or whether it's with us, which we'll get into a little bit later on, are all written within the bounds of the law that is there. Okay? And so it's so important for us to disentangle the two. If we don't separate the two in our minds, then it can be so easy for us to say, well, that covenant is already done, and therefore this part of the law goes with it, right? Covenant does not equal law. Covenant is within the bounds of the law, all right? So when we talk about new covenant and old covenant, sometimes we'll start thinking about aspects that might have changed. The law is the same. Covenants will change to an extent, but we'll also see a lot of similarities with these covenants along the way. Hopefully, you'll be able to see those. I'll try to point some of those out. So, we're getting into the Abrahamic covenant. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 22. Genesis chapter 22 to start with here. Genesis chapter 22. We'll pick it up, actually, kind of skimming over here. Isaac is born, right? As you know, Isaac was a son of promise. Abraham, Sarah tried to figure out another way to have a son of promise through her handmaid Hagar. And so Ishmael was also there, but Ishmael's a little bit older. And so there's a little bit of consternation that happens in verse 8 through 21. But we see in verse 12 that God reiterates to Abraham, even though Abraham had kind of tried to figure out how to get an heir, because he thought he had a better idea for it, God said to Abraham, "Do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her." And here's the kicker. "For in Isaac your seed shall be called." Which is exactly what God had said. He said, "You're going to have a son. This is the son of promise. And I'm going to make this happen." Well, Abraham tried to make it happen. Had another son. But it's not the son through whom God said, this is going to be the son through whom all the blessings come. That's coming through Isaac. Okay? That was in chapter 21. Did you guys follow me or not? Sorry. Chapter 21, verse 12 is where I just was. I apologize. Chapter 21, verse 12. And now we're going to go to chapter 22. Here we go. Genesis 21, verse 12 is where God reminds Abraham that Isaac is going to be one through whom the blessing comes. Then we get to chapter 22, and we see here, this is the testing phase for Abraham. I shouldn't even say testing phase. This is where we see Abraham finally listen to God. How's that? I've given the message about the faithlessness of Abraham, because you can walk through Abraham's life and you can see that he never really fully obeyed God. Even though there are things that he did, he was always holding back a little bit. And I think what we just read in chapter 21 just shows that. When God said, leave your family, leave your father's household, leave your country, and go where I tell you, and I will make of you a great nation. Let's actually go, you know what, let's, just for fun, let's kick back, let's go read this. Because I think it's important for us to get the context here. There we go. Chapter is important too. Chapter 12, verse 1 of Genesis. The Lord said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And so we have this blessing, this promise to Abraham and to his descendants. As I made note of in that sermon, Abram didn't fully follow this. He brought some of his father's house with him. So he left his house, but he brought Lot right along with him. Lot was not his responsibility. Lot was his father's responsibility. Abraham's father took on Lot when his brother died. Lot was not a young man at this time. You can go, and it doesn't exactly say his name, but when you figure out how long Abraham was journeying, by the time they're coming out of Egypt, Lot had a mass. He had a family. He had a mass of animals that were large enough that they were contending with Abraham, and so they had to part ways because their herdsmen were in strife and things like that. It was just too great for them to be together, right? That length of time. Lot was not a young man when they left from Haran. And so Abram didn't need to take him. So Abram didn't fully listen to God. He's like, he listened mostly, but he didn't. Then when he goes down to Egypt, you know, God keeps talking to him and working with Abram. But he goes down to Egypt. He lies to Pharaoh, lies to Abimelech about his wife. When God tells him, I'm still going to give you a son, he says, okay, you know what, I think I can make this work. And so he and Sarah figure out, well, we'll do this with Hagar, and then maybe that'll be the heir. But he's not fully listening to God. Here in chapter 22, what we see here recorded, and none of this is to question what God has said about him, but I think the beautiful thing, again, as I mentioned in that message, is that God sees us for what we can be. And therein lies the value that we have. He's not looking at us for as we are statically, because as we are statically right now today, not worth it. For what we can be, definitely worth it. And so he's willing to keep investing. But it came to pass, we're in chapter 22, verse 1, after these things, that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. He said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose in the morning, early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. So on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, the lad, and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac said to Abraham his father and said, my father. He said, here I am, my son. And Isaac says, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. This, actually, if you go back to it was verse 5. So verse 7, verse 5, just go to show that Abraham here is trusting in God to provide. God said here, go and do this task, which a lot of people can get stuck on, that he was told to go sacrifice his son. And you can kind of get lost in the weeds as to whether or not this was a practice that was, well, okay, this is what the other pagan gods people did as part of their ritual and these various other things. But what we see in Abraham's response is finally, it didn't matter what God asked him. He was going to go and step out on faith. Because did he actually step out on faith when God told him to leave? Well, he did, but he held back. He brought a safety blanket in Lot. When God told him, I'm going to provide you a son, did he step out of faith? He's like, okay, but I don't know, maybe we can make this happen, right? And so he didn't fully step out in faith. Here, he's like, you know, God's going to provide. We are going to come back to you, is what he told the men who had gone with him. So he was fully trusting that he and his son were going to come back. Whatever it was going to happen. God was going to take care of it. It was going to work out. And so he's stepping out on faith, and he says the same thing to Isaac. This also goes to show, a couple of things in verse 7, also goes to show when we're talking about law and we're talking about covenant, right? Isaac knew what a sacrifice consisted of. Just like when Cain and Abel brought a sacrifice to God. Just like when Noah brought only clean animals and he treated them differently. There are laws of God that are outside of what these covenants are. They were already in place. We're not to Sinai yet, right? So the law hadn't been given, re-given, or, you know, to the nation of Israel. But there were aspects of things in worship of God that were already known and understood. And so we just kind of like, I don't think it's too hard to read between the lines in that way, that this is something that was known. So this covenant that God had with Abraham, let's go down to verse 15. The angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men, and they rose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. The angel of the Lord, upon his obedience of just doing what God said, says, now I'm going to fulfill the covenant that I made with you 35 years ago-ish, right? When he's 75, he's telling him, come out of the land, from your father's household, from your home, and go where I tell you. You do this, I will make of you a great nation. Blessing, I will bless you. Multiplying, I will multiply. It's the same exact thing if you go back to Genesis 12. It's the same exact thing. He says, now I'm going to make good on that. And this is the beautiful thing when you look at these covenants and these agreements. Sometimes we can make the covenants out to be these massively great things, huge things. They're individual contracts in many cases. The whole reason, I mean, we read a little bit about it today in Jeremiah and Isaiah. The whole reason that God is doing what he's doing for Israel is because he's making good on this covenant. He said, this is what I said I'm going to do because of your father Abraham. And there are multiple times where God says, not because of you, but because of my name, and because I have to hold true to my word for what I said to your father Abraham, or to my servant Moses, or to my servant David, right? I've made the analogy between looking at Jonathan and David, right? When we start talking about covenants, and we think about them separate from the law. God makes covenants all the time, and he makes covenants, and who does he make a covenant with? People who are willing to listen to him. Who does he keep his covenant with? People who actually listen to him, right? And so you have, in the book of Hebrews, a listing of people who had a covenant with God and who fulfilled their end of the bargain and therefore are going to be the recipients of what God has said is going to happen, which we know is eternal life, part of his family, and some of them will have specific positions in his family of leadership. But that's the end of their covenant. And then he also follows through on these other various things where now there's a little bit more detail given in verse 17 where your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. And so there's a strength that is there. So there's a little bit more added to it. And it's I would say sometimes if you think about a contract that you might have to produce, you know, a number of widgets, right? And you have a certain amount of time to produce those widgets. If you produce them faster than what the contract says, that can be a very good thing. If you produce them for less money than what the contract says, that can be a good thing. Everybody wins. More likely to get more business, more likely to be, you know what, that's okay. You made more money. It's like somebody does what they say they're going to do in the contract. You're happy to do more business with them. Maybe you're happy to give them a bonus. Maybe whatever these things are. And so it's like, you can see, it's like, more people don't fulfill their end of the bargain with God than do. And so I was going back to Jonathan and David. I think this is an important note for us. God's never just working with who you think he's working with. When he promised to Saul that he will keep his name and his family on the throne, that's the same. God gave that promise, that covenant. He made that deal, all the same words, all that means all the same thing, right? He made that same deal with Saul, with David, and with Jeroboam. Same deal. Only one of them fulfilled it. Only one of them did. And so now you see. And I think that that's why, to me, it's such an important note for us that when you see David and Jonathan, that it's such a sad state for Jonathan. And what a humble individual. I mean, I am looking forward to meeting Jonathan in the kingdom, whichever resurrection he's going to be in, because what an individual to be willing to give up what he knew in the mind of every human being was rightfully his, because his dad blew it. His dad didn't fulfill his end of the bargain. So it gets passed on to David, right? And then David's grandson messes that up, and it gets rent from him. Because of his disobedience, because of Solomon's disobedience, and because of his poor governance, right? And you see Jeroboam just automatically, no faith that God's actually going to fulfill his end of the bargain. And he's like, nope, we're moving these altars. We're going to get all the people where I can control them. You know, don't let them move. Don't let them go. They don't, you have to go there. Come on over here. This is fun. And so he didn't fulfill his end of the covenant either, his agreement with God. And so when we're talking about covenants, I think it's very important for us to look at these in the eyes of agreements. Okay? And there are some of them that when we kind of get a little bit farther along, we'll be able to see that as spiritual descendants of Abraham, or as descendants, as spiritual Israel, some of the things will still, we should still be abiding by, which is why, you know, we're not keeping the Sabbath because it's part of the covenant. We're keeping the Sabbath because it's part of God's law. It doesn't matter if you made the covenant with him or not, you got to be keeping the Sabbath. It's part of his law, right? But there are other things that we do when we're talking about it for how we behave and what we do to show that we are listening and adhering to God. So, anyway, so Abrahamic covenant. Let's go to Galatians chapter 3. Any questions or any thoughts here before we kind of shift gears? If you have them, go ahead. Mr. Samet, you got one. Are you thinking about it?
Yeah, from the statement about possessing the gates of their enemies, that it appears that God was not just that thing, but he's including his entire plan. He already has everything planned out, in general at least, of what he wants to do. And he starts with Abraham and eventually fulfills it with
United States and Britain, you know, being Ephraim and Manasseh. Mm-hmm. That he had all that already planned out, so to speak. I'm not sure if he had exact individuals' names, you know, say in the latter times or something, but it appears like it's a huge plan, and God said, hey, oh, this is part of it, and this mm-hmm. is what I'm doing with this covenant.
Yeah, and when you can have the almost omniscient view that we get to have because of our spot in history, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20, and so we get to look back and we can see these things in history, to your point about, you know, God saying from the start in that promise, in that covenant, okay, and now because you obeyed my voice and you didn't hold back your son, your only son, your descendants are going to hold the gates of their enemies. Now, there's a lot of ways that can bear out, And there's a lot of ways also to constrain that, and there are also ways to expand that. And I will say that, you know, to your point, I don't know what that had to be, but we do know, and we were able to see through Ephraim and Manasseh and the blessings that were there, that the gates, whether it was the control over the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal, these various other spots where we've seen the British Empire hold and be able to have sway and influence over, but that could have also been a fairly small thing as well. And so it's like, our father is very good at not painting himself into a corner to have to provide something to a belligerent child. And as human beings, we're very good at being belligerent. And so he gives himself the opportunities to bless as much as he would like, and also to withhold those blessings when it needs to be in order to give a lesson to the children.
I think another interesting
point is that when Abraham is resurrected at the resurrection and he sees the Bible, he'll see what he did then and how it plays out through history.
I think he's going to have a unique position to see that.
Yeah, he'll be able to see all that. I think that'll help him. He'll learn from it, and then he'll be able to, whatever he needs to do or wants to do, or, you know, from that lesson, it'll help him.
Well, to that point, and I think this is the important thing about each and every one of our covenants and our contract, because when we go down in the water and we're baptized, we are entering into that covenant, into that contract with God. And I think the important thing for each of us is that we have to look back. Even if we don't have a book written about us, we can look back on our life and we can see what God has done and how he has opened doors, how he has closed doors, how, you know, when we were obedient, he made good on the promise that he had in guiding, directing, and providing, opening the store, you know, the windows of heaven, and so that we couldn't contain the gifts or whatever it is. We can all look back and see that, and I've made a lot of comments, and that's super important for us to do. If we don't do that, it's a lost opportunity. And if we don't share those blessings and share the story of those blessings with other people, we aren't doing God justice for everything that he has done for us. And that's where he's saying, you know, freely you've given, freely you have received, go and freely give. And that is not just the truth, but that should also be with encouragement. That should also be with the stories that build faith. These are all things that come through. And I mean, this book is a book of covenants, of contracts. And so, I will say I'm somewhat saddened that we have viewed it so with such a tunnel vision, so myopically, when we talk about the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, and we really only think about the Old Covenant being, well, Abraham or Moses and what they did in the Old Testament. But this is a good time to segue back into Galatians 3. Let's go to Galatians chapter 3, verse 15. It says, "Brethren, I speak in the manner of men, though it is only a man's covenant, yet it is confirmed. No one annuls or adds to it. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is Christ." So it's talking about that prophecy there being of Jesus Christ being the seed of Abraham. "And this I say, that the law, which was 430 years later, cannot annul the covenant that was confirmed by God in Christ, that it should make the promise of no effect. For if the inheritance is of the law, it is no longer of promise, but God gave it to Abraham by promise." So, the inheritance, again, came because of his obedience to, not the law, to the contract that he made with God. You fulfilled your end of the contract, here's your inheritance. Right? This is the same thing when you talk about movement from slave of sin, slave to righteousness, servant in his house, to an heir. You fulfill the contract, and there's another opportunity that is granted. You're no longer the slave to sin, now be a slave to righteousness. Okay, you were a great slave, now, you know, do you want to stay in this house, or do you want to go out of the house? I'd like to stay and become a servant. So you're a servant. You know what, you've been such a great servant for the entirety of your life, I'd like to adopt you into my family. And so the inheritance, it bumps up. And when it's talking about this, we're looking at the expansion of this agreement, this covenant that God had with Abraham. And I should have wrote it down, the thought that we were just talking about there, just the trying to gather it back if I can. Oh, it's gone. Anyway, so, just the fact that these promises, the way that the when we look at things from strictly an old versus a new covenant, we lose the opportunity of viewing this book as a bunch of contracts that God has fulfilled. And so there are countless contracts here that you'll see, and there are promises that are made, and when the person abides by that part of the contract, then God keeps to his end of the bargain. One of the components here that was a part of Abraham's contract, let's look at this, Genesis chapter 17, verse 9. Genesis chapter 17, verse 9. Genesis chapter 17, verses 9 through 10. God says to Abraham, "As for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you, throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you, and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised. This is not a part of the law, but this is clearly a part of the Abrahamic covenant." Right? And so when we're starting to talk about aspects of it, sometimes we can say, well, what was done away with through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ? I think a better question is, to which covenant are you party to? You know, where are you? I mean, you can have, this probably isn't the best example, but I'm thinking of tort law, right? You can be party to a lawsuit if Wells Fargo signs you up for an account that you didn't want to sign up for. You know, there was a massive thing. You could be party to that lawsuit, right? But everybody could tack on to it that somebody else started. When we're talking about the contract with God, which contract and which covenant are you abiding by, right? And so here is a part of Abraham's contract and the contract with his descendants. He said, you and all your descendants need to do this. This is what you do. This is part of the covenant, part of the contract. And I think it's also important to distinguish it, and I'll have the handout next time, because I think it's going to be important for what we get into when we get deeper into the Sinaitic covenant. But it's important to note, again, which covenant we are a part of. Okay, there may be things where we are a descendant of Abraham, spiritually speaking, and so you can take certain actions, right? But the concept of circumcision from the heart, and the concept of circumcision, and the concept of baptism, there are these different things along the way that are symbolic and a part of that, whatever the contract is, right? One does not necessarily have to negate the other. One does not necessarily have to supersede the other, but we're talking about contracts. Okay? So I just want to line that out. But in Genesis chapter 17, verses 9 through 10, we see here every male child is supposed to be circumcised. That's also included in Leviticus chapter 12. If you go to Leviticus chapter 12, so what we see here is we see the movement of this. We're so far, when we talked about Adam and Eve, their covenant, their contract with God, what is specified there and what we see there doesn't really go beyond them. The consequences go beyond them because of their breach of the contract, right? So the consequences went beyond them. But the promise that was initially there, which we kind of extrapolated through looking at what God was doing, where he was providing them a place to live, he was providing them food, he made sure they were safe, right? And he also gave them truth, so they could know what to do. When they decided then to seek out their own source of food, they decided to seek out their own. Those were things that then netted consequences. With Noah, again, the promise that God made to Noah, the covenant that he made with Noah is, you know what, I am not going to destroy all of the earth. With Abraham, though, the covenant that's made goes beyond Abraham himself. And so it extends beyond. And so because of that, it now extends, right, you have other people who become party to the covenant in a rolling way down the road. And so here we are, Leviticus 12. Leviticus chapter 12, verse 3. This is given to the children of Israel right after the clean and unclean meats are given. You have some other qualifications just nested in here, and it says, on the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. She shall then continue talking about the woman and how she's supposed to go through her purification. But it talks about the sons being circumcised. Why are they still being circumcised? This isn't Abraham. Well, it's because part of the contract that God had with Abraham was that, Abraham, all of your descendants, as a sign of their continued obedience to me and deference to me, is that they're going to be circumcised. This is a whole other conversation in itself as to why that's the sign. That can be a fun conversation. But this is just showing that it carries through. Why? Because these are the descendants of Abraham. Okay? And so the descendants of Abraham are supposed to do this. You can get into the conversation about this when you look at what the Gentiles were doing. Who are the Gentiles in the New Testament? Everybody who is not of the house of Israel. So they were told they didn't have to do it. The house of Abraham, it's a never-ending covenant. Take that for what it is. You know, I am not sitting here and saying that you have to have that for salvation. But I will say, I can see the start of the contract. Take it for what it is. You know, again, there are things that are there that we might not understand. But I think that it's important to go back to Scripture and see what it says. Because I am not saying that you have to be circumcised as a male to be able to inherit eternal life. Paul very clearly stated that. Very clearly. However, the contract with Abraham and his descendants is also very clear. Right? And so it's one of those things that I think it's important for us to, again, go back, most importantly, to what God says in Scripture, what is recorded there for us, and ask whether or not we're doing what we ought to be doing. Because we're talking about contracts. And what is it about contracts that they say? Read the fine print. The devil's in the details. All those other fun things, right? They just blur past it so fast at the end of the car commercials or whatever the ads are that are going on. They don't want you to see what the side effects are of something. They hide all of those things. God says it's very clear. It's right here. But it's important that we read it and we know it. Okay? So the other point that I wanted to make is, as we're talking about these being individual contracts, I think this is what I lost earlier. But when we look at what God is doing, the contract that he made with Adam and Eve was essentially, be here where I've placed you, do what I've told you to do, right? And there's going to be blessings. With Noah, it was, go where I tell you, into a boat, do what I tell you, and I'm going to protect you. Right, so he did also preach. He was a preacher of righteousness for that entire time. But he's doing what God told him to do. He's going where God told him to go. What did he tell Abraham? Go where I tell you to go. Do what I tell you to do. Is that any different than what he has asked from us? If you're not willing to leave or to forsake father or mother or sister for his sake, you're not fit for the kingdom. So leave behind in that way your family. Take on what I'm going to give you. Go where I tell you to go. Listen to what I tell you to do. And it's the same thing. It's the same, in essence, contract, all across time with every single person. And there are other, you know, small differences. Not a king. I'm not going to sit there and like have all my progeny like after me if I'm obedient, like what David was, right? But for the time of life that we have of 70 years, we have a duration. Follow him for 70, well, for some it's more. You're very healthy, right? But it's like he says, follow me for your life. Go where I tell you to go. Take the truth that I'm giving you. And at the end, here's what the reward is. It's been the same contract all along to anybody who's willing to listen. It hasn't changed. And that's an important thing for us to note, because God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And it's important for us to remember that, because if you have somebody who's constantly changing the contract, do you want to go into business with them? No. Because I don't know if you're just going to rewrite it. And so it's a very important thing for us to know. Again, let's go back to Genesis 26, verse 5, just to kind of reiterate this. Genesis 26. We'll pick it up in verse 4. Actually, let's pick it up in verse 3. It says, God told Isaac this. After Abraham had followed and listened, God tells Isaac, his son, dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For you and your descendants, I will give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham, your father. You see, this continues. It's rolling through the generation. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Why? Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my law. He fulfilled his part of the contract. And his contract was, keep my commandments, keep my statutes, keep my law, go where I told you. It's the same thing that God asks of us, each and every one of us. So Abraham kept those laws. Those laws, we know, again, they don't kind of make a formal appearance until Sinai, where they're codified. But we do know that he's the father of the faithful. We do know, as we're looking through into Hebrews, we can see all those who died in faith, not having received the promises, but saw them afar off. And having faith in God, why? Because he had shown himself to be faithful. Having faith in him, that he was going to fulfill his promise, they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth, looking forward to a city whose builder and maker is God. So as a result of that covenant with Abraham and his descendants, the land of Canaan, they have what is today, well, actually partially today, because Israel is not all of what Israel was at the time of the Bible, but there's a location that is there that is put into place, and it was to become a great nation. Kind of intro here, then we've got some time, getting into the Sinaitic covenant. So now we have the covenant at Mount Sinai. This is probably what I think most of us would classify as the Old Covenant. If we're looking at it, we're looking at the law of Moses, we're looking at these various things, and we say, okay, here is the covenant that God made with Israel. Let's go to Exodus 19. Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19, verse 1 says, in the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai, for they had departed from Rephidim and come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. He sets the stage of saying, recall what I did to get you here. It's kind of like, and so therefore, you should be able to trust me. You should be able and willing to listen to me. Verse 5, now therefore, here's the covenant. Here's the contract. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. If you're going to be obedient, and you're going to keep the covenant, keep our agreement, then I'm going to make of you a great nation, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And there's the reward. God says, if you do this, then I'm going to do this. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. And all the people together answered and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. All that he has spoken we will do. So they say, we're going to abide by this contract. We're going to do what it says. We're going to do all that you say. Now, what we get to as you go through, let's go to chapter 20. What we see here in the Ten Commandments, we could say, or just as easily as you might talk about a recreation at the beginning of Genesis, this is a re-giving of these commandments because they had obviously been lost. But we saw evidence of them, whether it's through sacrifices, through an understanding of Abraham and Melchizedek, the understanding of who was God, whether we see through creation account, where we see that God set into motion times and seasons, which were set, which is the same Hebrew language that they use when they're talking about the holy days. God set this stuff in motion beforehand. But he tells him, he says, verse 2, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Is that any different than what the issue was with Adam and Eve? No. Is this a new law? No. Expectation, exactly the same. I want to be your source for truth. I want to be your source for understanding and knowledge. I want you to trust that I'm going to provide you with what you need. Remember, I bore you out of Egypt on eagle's wings. Remember everything that went on. And this is, it's the underpinnings of the relationship. It's the underpinnings of the contract. Okay? So, you can go down through these. Verse 4, you shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness. Not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. All of these, when you talk about the principle of what they mean in the relationship with God, there's a reason that Jesus was able to distill it down. You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Actually, it wasn't him. I think it was a lawyer. No, it was Jesus. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, and love your neighbor as yourself. Right? When you distill it down to that, again, there's nothing new here that hasn't already been exemplified in the contracts that we see beforehand. Okay? The idea of what is right versus what is wrong. Cain knew that he had done something wrong, so this concept of murder was already understood. You have the account of Dinah and how Jacob's sons treated him. So the understanding of adultery was already there. Abimelech even knew that. I mean, it's like, whoa, I didn't know she was your wife. You know, so this concept of these things that are being shared here, again, not new. This is God's law. These are his expectations. So when we get into the covenant is exactly what we read beforehand. Keep my law, keep my statutes, you know, obey them. It's exactly the same, again, exactly the same covenant. And so then what he does is he goes and he gives his law to the children of Israel because they didn't have it. They had forgotten it. It hadn't been a part of their day-to-day life, right? And so he reminds them of that. Um, Exodus chapters 21, 22, and 23 are very often referred to as the Book of the Covenant. They present a lot of laws. See, and this is the thing where, again, I have to stress the importance of disentangling, in our mind, the concept of the law versus the covenant. What God is doing with the children of Israel here is going over the basis of the law. Because his covenant is, with everybody, always the same. If you will obey my law, my statutes, and my judgments, then I'm going to do this. Right? You're going to have an inheritance. And so in order to abide by that covenant, you have to know the law. Right? And so this is where it gets into, what does the law say? So perhaps when we have conversations about which aspects of the covenants are still in play, perhaps the better question would be, which aspects of the law are still there or were fulfilled by Jesus Christ? Because it's like the covenants are something totally separate. The covenants are our agreements. But when you go through Exodus 21, 22, and 23, you get into a little bit more of Leviticus, you will see that there are a lot of laws. But these are all God's expectations for how we treat one another, for how, you know, you borrow your neighbor's mower, what you ought to do, you know, if you have animals that are uncontrollable, if you have somebody who steals and gets caught, all these various things, right? That's all part of the law that underpins the contract. The contract is quite simple. Follow my law and my statutes and my judgments. There you go. So, I think one of the interesting components of this is as you get into kind of moving out, if you get into Exodus 25 through 31, you're going to see what I would dare say is a preparation for the children of Israel in moving from just a legalistic perspective on it. Because, again, if you give somebody, if you say, here's a contract, do everything that I tell you to do, and you give them a bunch of laws, it's kind of like, well, we have that in our country. We've got a bunch of laws, right? Do you know all the laws that are on the books? No, but you do try your best to follow the ones that you know of, you know, speeding, not taking stuff from your neighbor's yard, you know, these other things, right? But it's like, we're trying to follow them, but we don't know the extensiveness of the laws. And it's a beautiful thing that God has actually so few laws lined out. But what we see is, and it became extant through the a Pharisaical mindset where you just focused so much on the legalistic aspect of what it was that people forgot that, you know, how to follow it with their heart. And we see God starting to reveal to them in 25 through 31 in Exodus the means for them through the building of the tabernacle and all the things that are there to be able to have a closer connection. You know, one that he had with Adam and Eve that was severed through their disobedience. But then on an individual basis, Noah walked with God. Abraham walked with God, had conversations with him, right? Jacob wrestled with God. You know, you just have these different interactions with them. And so when the children of Israel begin to build the tabernacle in the wilderness, what they're doing, probably somewhat unbeknownst to them, is they're rebuilding what is kind of the bridge between them and God. Because it's the opportunity for them to then again have that relationship. Because when we break the contract, what is going to ensure that either party is going to still come back to the table? Well, God says, you know what, I'm willing to come back to the table if you do this. And here where we see the sacrifices put into place, this is all here to heal the breach of the contract, right? Again, I think I made the comment when the last time when we were talking about the covenants, just initially, when you think about it from a contractual standpoint, if somebody breaches the contract, you have a couple options, right? You can sue them for breach of contract and try to get what you can get. You can say, well, they're in the contract, I guess we're done with that. That's not going to happen. Or you can say, let's come back to the table and let's mediate another option that might be more amicable for everybody involved, right? And so you have an option for how you're going to proceed. Those options are all on the table for God. But he's not taking us to court. You know, Job tried that with God, lost. But what God is doing, he's saying, you know what, unless you're so belligerent that you're just not even going to come to the table, I'm willing. Let's come back to the table. Let's rewrite the terms of the contract. Okay, you breached it. All right, I have somebody who's willing to pay that fine. Yeah, I have somebody who's willing to vouch for you, that you're still willing to come to the table to talk about this contract. And that's what Jesus Christ is doing. But we see here in chapters 25 through 31, if you read through there and you see the building of the tabernacle, this is introducing the children of Israel who did not have a direct personal relationship with God to the process that God has shown us through Jesus Christ that was there with Abraham, that was there possible for Adam and Eve to be able to go directly to God and talk to him, right? To be able to have that contract reaffirmed that this is what we're still working towards. Because again, if you have a contract and somebody breaches it, if I break my contract with you, you have zero legal obligation to fulfill anything that you said in that contract. If I don't give you so many widgets and so much time for so much money, you can come after me for all of the amount that you invested. You don't have to do any of the stuff that you said because I broke the contract, right? We're the only ones who break the contract. And so we're 100% beholden to God's mercy and his graciousness to come back to the table to start talking about how to rewrite the contract. And that's where you move from the Old Testament in that way into the New Testament, where people were so focused in the Old Testament on the ritualistic aspects of how to repair the contract. They didn't realize they were trying to repair a contract. They were just doing something that they thought was part of the contract. And they missed connecting the two. So I don't want to delve too much deeper into this. We only got a couple minutes left before we've been on for an hour. Any other questions or thoughts as we're kind of talking about this? All right. Well, it's kind of a heady topic, and I'm not trying to confuse anything, so hopefully I'm laying it out clearly enough. If I'm repeating things, I apologize to an extent, but I think sometimes I'm just trying to make sure that I'm getting it across as clearly as possible. So if it's not clear, let me know, and I'll try to do a better job of elaborating on the next time. So with that, we'll finish the Bible study. Thank you guys for staying and attending, and have a great rest of the Sabbath.